Didn't quite get that. What did you say?
I said that the fishing game now, you know, it's taking so many of our fishing days away a week, and then there, just I think last year, we didn't have a buyer on Kings last year, but they don't give us very many commercial days. On Chums last year, I think we only had two days, and they were hitting thick, and we had a chance to make good money, and they said, bang, that's it. You can't sell anymore, or we'll suspend your license. And take your gear, you know.
You said most of the younger generation want to live subsistence. You referred earlier to your own children.
Well, not most of them, but I mean, a lot of them want to. I know all my children do. But in the village, most children do because they're raised like that. And they go, I'm in town, everybody that's gone away came back.
Everybody that left Tananaw for Fairbanks, Anchorage, or Seattle has come back.
Uh-huh. They couldn't stay away. It's hard for them.
The farther away you get from the cities, the more likely they are that people are going to come back. But once you get close where you can get, you have access by road, and it's so easy to get in and out of town, I think that's where you run into problems. You know, your kids have to fly back and forth. You know, they can't just hop in the car and drive into Fairbanks and spend a night on Second Avenue. So I think you're fortunate that your children were raised to utilize the land. They know how to hunt, how to trap, how to fish. But for many of the children who have access to Fairbanks, they've lost that. The younger people. You know, they didn't want to be out in the trap line. They'd rather be in Fairbanks.
You mean like the ones, like the 16, 17, 18-year-old ones? Well, I noticed the ones that in their 20s, you know, early 20s, all like, because in Enana, I know a lot of them, like the Lords, you know, they all those boys love trapping and fishing. They're always out in boats, and they can go to Fairbanks anytime they want. They probably do, but they always back there fishing and trapping. You don't hear about them going out. You know, they were 48 or anything.
But for a lot of those, of course, Edmund's family is like your family. That was a way, that wasn't something that just happened. That's a way of life for them. That's the way they've been taught since they were grown. They were growing up. But for many of these children who've maybe lost their parents or whose parents started working for the railroads or for the schools, they didn't have that opportunity to hunt and fish. Like your family and like the Lords. You know, you see a lot of those people stuck in towns, stuck like at Birch Park. You don't.
I know a lot of people in Fairbanks. You don't see too many of them from the villages or small places like Nenana living in Fairbanks year round.
Well, but they can go back and forth. They have the opportunity to go back and forth.
To fish and trap and stuff. It's maybe the older people that live at Birch Park or the younger ones. But not, you know, the kids, the kind that can run their own boat or their own snow fishing or drive dogs. Sure, we see them up there like we do, you know. We go for shopping or visiting, but not to stay. I mean, if I had to stay there a week, I'd go mad.
But on a different subject.
You identify yourself by?
This is Mary Kansowick. What is the role of the IRA Council in Tanana? What are they doing?
I really don't know. I didn't even know they had that until last winter. I think somebody came up and said, you know, what's IRA or whatever, and I said, I don't know, never heard of it. See, we at Tanana, we just more or less stay home. We are so busy doing stuff, we don't know what's really going on. I don't really, honestly don't know what they are or what they're doing. Do you know anything about it?
Well, I know that there is an IRA council, and I know that they have a president or a chief, which is Eileen Kosevnikov, Tati's wife.
Well, maybe we'll hear about that tomorrow night.
See what they do or what they're for.
Well, they may be coming up here.
Oh, I see. Okay.
No, she's in town.
Is she now?
She,
they were in camp when I went down.
Yeah, she went back to work.
Okay.
And he went to town last. Well, he's supposed to be in camp, though. He's probably in camp, but I doubt if he'll be up here. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Toddie wanted to come last night, I know. He'll be back now because Aaron was watching the week.
Well, maybe we could take a break for a while, and I gather some other people will be coming later. And
Well, Tom?
Yeah?
This is Jim Sykes. Mr. Sunnyboy was talking earlier about the election process around claims. Do you want to get that later?
No, let's go ahead.
Because she said some interesting things there. Yes. Could you tell us a little about the election?
Well, when they were doing the elections.
Yeah, when was it, and what was the process?
Let's see. I went to Tetlin in 1973. Was it 73 I flew into Tetlin? Remember I got stranded? It was 70 below?
Yeah,
it was 73. 73, yeah. And there were pamphlets written up, and there was a meeting held. It was one of the coldest periods of time they'd had in Tetlin in years. And it was 74 below. So people were not very willing to come out and listen to people talk at that point. We had been the only plane to get in. Dogs were starving. We set up a box. We took an old gasoline box, I remember. We had ballots for them. We tried to explain to them what the vote was about. But we didn't go door to door. There was a meeting, an announcement that a meeting was going to be held. And that was the election. That was the way the election was held, for them to vote on if they wanted to stay a reserve or they wanted to go into the corporations. And that's how it was for most of the corporations that we would fly, especially the ones that were way out. That one sticks in my mind because it was so cold.
Well, at the meeting, was there any procedure? Did anybody explain what ANCSA was about, and then the advantages of joining ANCSA and the disadvantages, and so on and so forth?
Yes, there was an explanation given, but of course, again, they were very timid. They didn't know what questions to ask. They accepted what you said. And of course, when you build a reputation of, you know, they were getting to the point where they would build some trust up in legal services. And if this is what legal services said was going to happen, we went out just as legal services. I don't remember that there was a member of Doyon or any other corporation present. We were elected. We were asked to do the election, and you know. I remember the pamphlets were there, we had explained it to them, but still, they didn't have the background and the knowledge to ask the pertinent questions that would be needed, and so they would just vote. Do they want to stay a reservation, or do they want to go into a corporation?
Do you remember how many of those elections were held, that is, elections to choose between reservation and corporation?
Let's see. It's Tetlin. There was Arctic Village. There was Venati. I can remember three, and I think I can't tell you how many elections there were held. I was involved with three of them. Arctic Village, Tetlin, I think Venati. I was at Toke, and that was. But I didn't cover the other areas. Other members of Legal Services covered the other corporations, but I was working with Mary Claire Hale at that time in that particular area.
How did the votes go? Which way did they vote?
Eagle was another. Eagle, yeah. Eagle went reserve. Tetlin. I think Tetlin went reserve. There were three of them. Three in reserve, I believe. They were close. It was a real close vote. Of course, there weren't many votes to begin with.
Because there weren't many people there, or because of low turnouts at the meeting?
There were low turnouts at the meeting. And a lot of that had to do with the weather conditions, because it was so terribly cold. There had to be a quorum. I know there was a quorum to have the election. But of course, Tetlin is very small. I mean, it was at that point maybe 15 houses. And I can't remember how many were actually eligible to vote at that time, because there were a lot of elders there and there were many children. I really can't, you know, it's been a lot of years.
What was the title of your job? What were you called?
I was paralegal. At that time, they called them secretaries, and then as years went on and as more training was provided, then we were called paralegals.
I'm Carol Rose. I wanted to ask something about elections now to the corporations. We've heard some people saying that they're not very satisfied with the way the regional corporation is managing things, and I was wondering if there was anything like a move afoot to get different boards of directors, or what the character of the campaigns was for people who are on the boards of directors.
I had mentioned earlier that I've been outside for 4 years, yeah. So I'm just starting to pick up from this point and find out what's taken place. But I think Gladys addressed that when she said that it's the same people over and over. There really isn't any new blood coming in to the boards of directors. And what I have heard that everybody is very disillusioned. But on the other hand, they really don't know what to do about it, because you get a certain group in there and it's very difficult to get them out. And I think a lot of people have become disenchanted with it and really don't even bother to vote anymore. You know, they do send the proper notifications out of the meetings and of the ballots, but for many of them, it goes in the fire.
You mean that because people are depressed and discouraged with the way things have been running, they don't bother to run for office or to try to campaign on new issues?
Why should they? Because they know even if they get in, you've got other members of the board that you're going to have to go against, and you have to live with these people every day. And they've never been able to make a change, even when they were in local, in just the tribal councils, let alone in a corporation. I've heard this time and time again. Even when you're in town, you hear people talk about it. Why bother? Like with the Big Doyon elections, why bother to even run?
I was wondering if the younger people that you were talking about earlier, who knew more about the act and who knew more about what the ramifications were, might in some way be getting involved in the whole corporation thing
and people our age getting involved in the corporation elections. I mean, would you want to run for an office in one of the corporations?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think that the interest is there. Because for many of the people, the elders have been doing it. Or, well, you know, I'm thinking now we're in our 30s. It's still the older people in their 50s who have been doing most of the politics in the village for years. They don't even bother to go against them. I don't think that they feel that they have the power to go against them. You know, would you think of running for an office?
Nope. So now it sounds to me like this is a sort of a mixture of discouragement, and it's also sort of a respect for the way things have been done. That is, it's, you know, it's the elders who've always been running things, and they still do in a different form.
I don't know if it wouldn't be so much that the against the elders. I think they've become very apathetic. It's the same people that have been running, not necessarily the elders, but say, for instance, you have the Smiths in there. The Smiths have been in the corporation for years and years. Why even bother to challenge it? Because it isn't going to make any difference. You know, there are certain people in the villages that have been involved in village politics and will continue, and you just don't have other folks that are interested in going against them. Because they haven't seen any changes to this point. What makes them feel that they're going to be able to put a voice in and change anything?
Okay. Well, thanks again. I think maybe we'll take a break now, and when the others arrive, if that's all right, we could maybe convene again, and when Mr. Earhart's back and some of the other people come from other camps. Well, there was why don't you sit over here, Lester, and we can just have a bit of a chat and put it on tape. And...
All right.
I'll have one. You always caught on me.
You, Melvin?
Oh, nice to go.
Anybody else?
It's the only way it's good.
Carolyn?
Hi, Carol.
I'll try one. They're going like hot dogs here.
Yeah. Anybody else? You?
What tune do you want to hear?
Well, we're resuming this gathering at Lester Earhart's fish camp on the Yukon River. Earlier, we heard from Mrs. Earhart and Mr. and Mrs. Sunnyboy, and so now we'd just like to talk a little bit with you about the land claim settlement, corporations, what you got out of it, what you think are the good points about it, the bad points? What about 1991 and the possibility of the sale of shares in the corporations and the possibility that non-natives might acquire control of the corporations and the land? What about the fact the children born since 1971 have no right to be enrolled as shareholders, and so on and so forth? Those are the issues that people have been talking about. Just would appreciate it if you might just talk a little bit about your own impressions and feelings. Maybe if you could start by just giving your name and so on. Bob, could we start with you?
Bob Cochrane, Tanana. I'd pass it on to somebody else.
Melvin Edmund, I don't know what really to say about it. Kind of up in the air, you know. It's, seem like, I don't know, they should give everybody a fair chance with the stock. I really don't have too much to say.
What about you, Lester? What are your views on it?
Well, I really don't know. It kind of, I don't know if it was good or bad. Some things is good and some isn't, you know.
What about corporations? You're a shareholder, I take it, in Doyon and in the Tanana Corporation.
Yeah,
well, tell me, what have you gotten out of that? What's that meant to you? How's it changed your life, if it's done anything?
No, it didn't do anything, I don't think, you know. It's, I don't know, kind of causes a lot of conflict in certain places, you know, in certain areas, like, you know, I mean, everybody thought they were going to get rich or something, you know, but nobody got anything out of it, I don't think, you know. We never did get the title to our land or anything, you know. Everything's still up in the air, and we're coming close to 1991. And, you know, in my opinion, I feel like it, you know, like they say, your share is going to come up. Well, in my shares in Tozitna, I don't see where it benefited too much. Seemed like we're going backwards all the time.
Well, we've been traveling since February, and we've been to villages in every region of Alaska now, and we've asked people. It may be that after 1991, Native people can sell their shares in the corporations, get some money for the shares, because non-Natives may very well want to take over the corporations and will pay for the shares. We've asked them, well, do you want to get some money out of this, or do you want to hang on to the shares and hang on to the land? And the majority, vast majority, say they want to hang on to the land, but that might mean restricting the right of people to sell their shares in 1991. That is, after hanging on to the shares for 20 years, they might be told, you've just got to keep hanging on. You can't sell them now. What's your attitude towards all that?
Well, if you're losing money at something all the time, you won't be too interested in it, and especially if you don't have too much to say, see? In our corporation down there, we don't have too much to say, even though we're a shareholder. They go ahead and do what seem like they do ahead and do what they want to do. And I imagine, you know, if you had shares in some other place, you'd go there and say, hey, this is the way I want my shares to be spent, you know. And if you got no say, well, it's just, you know.
Never once have we had the opportunity to express ourselves how we wanted, what we want to do with the money or how we want to invest or nothing. It's always somebody else is just telling us what we're going to do with our money. So, I mean, what money, we've never, I'm not interested in the money, I'm interested in the future or something like that, and we just haven't had the say.
Right.
We haven't.
Benefit by it. Well, it's benefit by it. That's my look at it, you know.
We're asked for other people are the ones after us.
Well, Melvin, maybe we could go back to you. Does this raise any concerns in your mind?
Well, as long as they give us title to our 160 acres, you know, that's more than what I will mostly want.
Native allotment.
Yeah.
Did you apply for one before 1971?
I just wasn't eligible for one.
You were too young, or? Yeah. You have an allotment, don't you, Mr.
No,
Hart?
I didn't. Oh. They rejected mine. Threw it out.
I went to court. I took affidavits and everything. I fought mine, Lester. And, well, I don't know. But I eventually got mine just last spring, but I went through years of. We've got, our family has probably almost, I don't know, Lester would probably say close to 70 years up where I'm at. And I'm the third generation there.
It's a fish camp a few miles farther up the Yukon from where we are now.
Sure. And I went through kind of a legal deal and everything, but I finally got it okayed last spring. And that's my grandfather's land, my father's land, and now... Now, it's mine now, but it took legal action and everything else just to finally get the okay for it last year, which is, I don't know.
What about the corporate setup what's your village corporation?
I'm down to Tozitna down there.
Oh, Tozitna too. Well, what have you had any dividends, or what's it all meant?
Well, from the start of this Native Lands deal, I've never been interested in any, you know, anything given to me, because I worked for everything all my life, and but I just wanted what was supposed to have been our family, you know, for years and years. I just wanted to improve on that and do that. So I've never really been into corporations. I just a self person, I guess. That's all.
Well, you're both, all of you are involved in fishing here along the Yukon. Can you tell me a little bit about the extent to which you're engaged in fishing and any restrictions that there are on fishing activity that particularly concern you?
Looking right behind you is the king of the river right there. He knows everything. He can answer any questions on that.
Okay. Maybe we could talk to the king of the river here and tell us a little bit about fishing on the river and how it's going and what changes you would like to see if you were king of the river and could do something about it.
Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty tough life, you know. It's a hard life to fish and to do something like that. And I wish more Native people would be interested in it. Really, I think it's a pretty good living myself. But and there used to be a lot of good Native fishermen here, and it seems to be dwindling out. You know, there's not very many of them anymore.
You mean the commercial fishery or the subsistence?
Well, both commercial and subsistence, you know. But the regulations seem to be all right right now. Only thing is we're a little low on our quota and the kings. They don't let us take as many kings as I think is right. Of course, I'm on the advisory board for this area for the fish and game, too, and that's another thing that we have a hard enough time, you know, trying to convince them of something, and sometimes we win, sometimes we don't, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, well, last year, I put in a proposal, you know, to the fish and game, you know, for the lower Yukon. Mm-hmm. I thought that, like at the mouth there, they always start right in on the fall chums, and they start right in on the head king salmon, you know, and I put in a proposal that I think that they were knocking the leaders down, you know, the strong fish, the ones that go ahead, the leaders, the main leaders. So we all got together and put a proposal in that they let them go a week before they start in on them. Well, at least we won that anyway, which I think is right. If you want something strong, you just can't start killing the good strong ones first and just, you know, mm-hmm. in anything like caribou or anything, any other kind of game, yeah. But they let us let a little lax on the kings, you know. We should have a little more of a quota on there. They got 2,500 kings all we can catch here from 30 miles below Tanana to the 6 miles above the bridge. I myself think it should be at least 4,000.
You're saying that it's a good life and pretty hard, and you wished more Native people were doing it. Why do you think they're not? Why aren't there more into it?
Well, you kind of put me on the spot there, but there's a lot of white people, see, here, right now. And, you know, they come in and they all got licenses and stuff like that, and they just kind of push the other small guy around, you know. They got their overbearing ways, and, you know, but like me, I stand right up to them. I don't back off from them. But I know a lot of the other people do, you know, they don't. But I go right, you know, if I don't feel as though it's the right thing, I get right on their case about it, you know.
I don't take no ground from nobody either, but I don't give no ground, not one inch either. I got that canyon up there. I don't touch nobody else's property or nobody else's fishing spot that anybody fished before or whatever, but they don't move in on me either, right there.
Take somebody else's fishing spot if he's gone for, well.
If he ain't there in breakup.
Right.
If he ain't there in breakup, somebody's moving right into his place.
And when you say somebody, who's it likely to be?
Just anybody that bought a license, say you bought a license in Anchorage on this river, they figure they have a right to move into any spot in the country. And I've seen it, Lester's seen it, everybody's seen it just time and time again.
Are these commercial fishermen, sports fishermen, or what?
They're commercial fishermen, but they go and buy these licenses, see? These licenses are for sale, you know, and you can they go as high as 20,000 to.
Oh, you mean limited entry?
Uh huh. Right. And so they go and buy them and think they're going to make big money, but you know, you can only make there's so much of that pie, and if you only take one slice out.
And when you buy one of these limited entry permits, that means you can go anywhere in the river.
Right. I mean, in this Y-5 area.
Yeah.
Right. Or you could fish down in Y-4, but, you know.
So they could go where Bob says his family has been fishing for 70 years.
Oh, yeah, try that. I mean.
They ain't going to make it in my area. Not in my area, they ain't going to make it.
How many limited entry permits are there in the area?
Well, I don't know, but the last time I looked at it, I think it was someplace in the 40s. A lot of guys that have it don't fish it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Could we come back to you? We've been do you what do you think about what these guys have been discussing?
Oh, it's true. It's been going on for years, but you just gotta hold your own.
His family's been there for. Longer than Lester been around too, in the area they're at, one of the greatest names, and they what was it, 2 years ago where you finally got a license?
Yeah, I had to go to court for them.
And his family's been in that Rapids area, the hottest area, hottest fishing area in the country, and they never had a they couldn't get a license.
Yeah, you mean Melvin? Yeah.
He's dad and them.
The only way that his family could get a license now would be to buy one for $20,000 for somebody who's got one.
Well, the way it's set up right now, but they should have had one automatic, but it just wasn't. People didn't know about it. They didn't know.
If they did advertise it, it would probably in the Anchorage paper or some other paper. And, you know, not all of us gets the paper every day. We can't see these things, you know. And I went to court for his dad 2 years ago and finally convinced him that this man been fishing on this river for 45 years. I think he's entitled to a license. Right. And they finally agreed.
What about Bob? What about the hunting? You said you told me when we stopped at your camp that you'd been out trapping for a winter. Just last year, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. How did it go?
I ate chicken, spam, and hamburger all winter. I followed the law, and I bought all my food out of the store. I didn't break no laws, I ate chicken, spam, and hamburger all winter. And what an outdoorsman I am, huh?
What down at Tanana? We're going to be holding a meeting there tomorrow night, but before we go down there, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your impressions of Tanana. How are the people making their the native people making their living, and how's it changed over the years? Can you comment on that, Lester?
Well. They had a PHS hospital there for years, ever since I could remember. And finally the government come along and said, we got to close this thing down, you see. And it just closed down here about 2 years ago. Well, it employed a lot of the people there. Maybe 29, maybe 35 people worked there off and on. Even I did. When I worked there maybe from March till I'd come fishing, you know, I'd paint for them. I'd be a painter. And it really helped a lot of people, but, you know, and it was work for the people. And the government says, no, we can't operate this hospital no more, so it shut down. But right now, Tanla is going down on account of that. The economy, there's hardly anything going on.
What about the people, native people in Tanana? Do they get out hunting, fishing, trapping at all?
Oh yeah, quite a bit. Well, we have to, like I say, in some respects, we kind of have to put up our own laws, you know. We have to put in our, you know, whatever, whenever we need it, we have to go get it, you know. Mm-hmm. Not all these laws is right on, you know.
That's hard to believe. Yeah. Oh, Alan Starr from Nanana? Tanana. Well, anything you'd like to say, Alan?
No. Let's see.
Okay. Anything you'd like to add, Melvin? Bob, what about you? Anything we haven't covered here?
You guys are making this finding for your future use in Canada, I guess, huh?
Right? Well, actually, we're doing it really mainly for Alaska Natives. I come from Canada, but they asked me to come because they wanted somebody from outside Alaska. I didn't want to come. I said, well, you better get somebody from Alaska to do this. And they said, well, everybody's kind of mixed up in the local politics and disputes. So I spent 3 years in the Canadian Arctic and reviewed the land claims of the people there. And
I've read your record, and it's impressive. I'm impressed with it. What the heck?
No need to go into that. We can ignore that. But I hope to, out of all this, I'll write a report, and it'll be sent to all of you next year, next summer. It'll be ready next summer, and it's independent, and it will be made public, and I hope it will have recommendations that will contribute to solving some of these questions. I can't promise to do anything about limited entry, because you're kind of locked into that, but the corporations, 1991, the land, I'll certainly do what I can about that.
Well, just for the future, this is a good start anyway. It's a good, truthful start. I mean, to find out what everybody thinks and do something that's going to be productive for all of us. Not only us, but the ones after us and everything, to keep it intact.
Well, the two organizations that asked me to do this, the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People, they'll be able to use the report in Canada, Greenland, Australia, New Zealand. So in other countries where Native people haven't yet settled their claims, they can take advantage of the Alaskan experience and avoid your mistakes, if indeed there were mistakes, and take advantage of the good features of your settlement. But the main thing is that with 1991 coming up, clearly something has to be done, and I hope that I can help you to work out an approach that will resolve some of those questions.
And Native peoples from these other countries are also contributing ideas to the commission towards the recommendations that Tom will be making.
Like a meeting of big chiefs all over, just
Well, we've already had some of the leaders of Native people from other countries come here, and they spent 3 weeks in Anchorage, and we talked about these questions, the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement is unique because it's the only one where the land is held by shareholding corporations, where shares can be transferred from one person to another, from native to non-native, and so on. And that makes it unique, but that's because nobody ever did it before, and nobody's ever copied it since. So you are the only ones in the world that have got this set up. So we'll hope we can come up with some recommendations that'll help. And I appreciate your talking with us tonight. And we enjoyed stopping here. And not much happened here.
You kind of beat lips, huh?
No, I'm just kidding. Mike Smith, who came with us on this trip, shot a bear this afternoon up in the woods behind the camp, and I didn't know that Lester had so many dogs, 100 dogs here, and so it's kind of an interesting place to have spent a few hours. So thanks again, and we'll send you a copy of the report. All three of you, we could just send it to Tanana, would that be the best?
Corporation or whatever.
Well, if we sent it to you directly, would it be a Tanana? Do you have a box number, or what is the best way to reach?
It'll find me.
No fixed address. Okay, well, thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Well, before Lester has his supper and... Okay.
Well, if you do anything that you'd like to add later, you can either send a letter to the offices, the commission offices in Anchorage, or call any time between now and winter.
Okay, thanks for the beer. Mm-hmm.